Gotta take my hat off to the champions. Congratulations. Congratulatory shout out to the Denver Broncos.
Oh, the Denver Broncos.
Yes, the Denver Broncos on winning Super Bowl 50. The Golden Game. They called it the Golden Game. And one of the league's golden boys, Peyton Manning, got to ride off into the sunset. If you haven't heard that for the millionth time, that's the millionth and first time. He rode off into the sunset with his second Super Bowl championship. Congratulations, Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. This is the preseason podcast of the year. Jay Hicks behind the mic for Hip Hop Sports Report. Just wanted to get off a few thoughts about the Super Bowl, y'all. I'm flying solo this evening. No guests, just yours truly rambling off the dome about the game. There's a lot of things to get to, of course, with the game itself, with the stuff that happened after the game, just what went wrong for the Panthers, what went right for the Denver Broncos.
Oh, the Denver Broncos!
And, yeah, this caught me off guard, y'all. I'm not going front. I don't think I definitely did not have the Broncos winning the Super Bowl at any point this year, including going into this game. So even when there was 32 teams to choose from and when there was two teams to choose from, regardless, I did not pick the Denver Broncos because I did not believe in their offense whatsoever. I did believe that their defense was legit, and the defense proved to be even better than I think any of us even would have expected. So let's go ahead and get right into it, y'all. But before we do that, of course, as we always like to do, we like to make sure that you guys know where to find us. HipHopSportsReport.com is the website. You can always hit us on Twitter at HHSReport. Hit us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HHSReport as well. The numbers are growing there, so I appreciate that. Of course, the podcast can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. You can also search the baddest podcast in the land, and we'll come right up to the top. Maybe. I mean, you could try it. I never did it, but maybe it'll work. I don't know. Again, shout out to my man Kenneth Hicks and Anthony Houston for their contributions to the podcast. Anthony, this is your account, man. The Knicks fired Derek Fisher today, so I'm anxious to get your thoughts. So I'm telling y'all to stay plugged into Hip Hop Sports Report, because I know Anthony's going to have some thoughts on Derek Fisher's firing, and it's probably going to be in the form of an Orange and Blueprint podcast in the near future. That would be my guess anyway, so look out for that. And you know, we've obviously been previewing the NFL playoffs all along the way, and we're going to have an article go up later this week about Cam Newton specifically. And I had to rework that article a little bit. I'm going to have to, and I'll tell you guys about that in a little bit. But let's jump right into the game, y'all. The Denver Broncos kind of smacked around the Panthers yesterday, because this is February 8th. I normally give the date. This is February 8th of 2016. And yeah, I mean, the Panthers kind of got smacked, y'all. And now the Panthers had only lost one game all year. And like I said, they got kind of trounced yesterday. 24-10 was the final score. Von Miller was the unblockable MVP of the game, and deservedly so. He was fantastic. The Broncos front four was able to consistently get pressure on Cam Newton, the league MVP, which I didn't expect based on how the Panthers had blocked for Newton throughout the course of the majority of the season. I think we expected Denver's defense to show up, and I think we expected Carolina's defense to show up. But let me just scale it back a little bit. This is why yours truly mistakenly picked the Carolina Panthers to win the game. And shout out to my man Jason Malone, a homie of mine who's been a Broncos fan since before I met him. He's the only true Broncos fan that I know. I know some other fans that support the Broncos for Peyton Manning, but I only know one Denver Broncos fan, and it's Jason. So, Jason, I know you're having a good day today, man. So, shout out to you for that. This is one of the narratives that I heard a lot, y'all, coming out of Super Bowl 50. One of the main narratives that I heard was defense wins championships. And everybody always says defense wins championships. It's one of the oldest cliches you'll ever hear in sports. And I actually subscribe to that theory. More often than not, usually I'm in the camp that, yeah, give me a good defense over a good offense any day of the week. I believe it holds true in football. I believe it holds true in basketball. I believe it holds true in baseball, where pitching beats hitting. That's defense, right? That's basically what you're talking about. So, I mean, you always see it in every sport. And we've seen it again multiple times here in recent memory in the NFL. We saw it with the 2000 Ravens. We saw it with the 02 Buccaneers. We saw it with those early Patriot teams, at least that first one anyways, that won the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 36. They were more of a defensive team than they were an offensive team. We saw it with even the year that the Colts won the Super Bowl in 06. It wasn't because of Peyton Manning, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but it was because the defense finally stepped up for him. We saw it even when the New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl a few years ago over the Colts. The Saints didn't have, they were an offensive team. They weren't known for the defense, but the Saints led the league in takeaways that year. So we've seen it periodically throughout recent history, all the way up until a couple of years ago. We saw Seattle, the number one defense in the league, go against the Broncos, the number one offense of all time, and the Seahawks put it on them. And then we saw last year, the Seahawks were the best defensive team in the league again, and they were extremely close to winning it all once again, but the game was actually decided on a defensive play. And then here we are this year, and we see the Broncos win, and everybody wants to throw out the defense wins championship cliche. I don't quite buy that in its entirety this time around, and here's why. The reason why I picked the Panthers to win was because I felt that Carolina and Denver both had an elite defense. That's a fact. Both defenses were among the best in the league. Carolina also happened to have the highest scoring offense in the league. Denver's offense was putrid all season. That was it. Like, I didn't overthink it much beyond that. I just looked at it and said, you know what? One of these teams is better than the other because they're better at the two more important phases of the game. You know, maybe defense is a draw. Maybe it's a slight edge to Denver, which is debatable, I thought, going into the game. And then offensively, it was clearly all Carolina. So the only way in which Denver really could have won this game would have been if their defense thoroughly outplayed Carolina's defense, by which I mean they forced more turnovers, made more plays, and gave Denver a shorter field to work with, and Denver was able to capitalize on it. And that's exactly what happened. But the narrative that defense wins championships, in this instance, as it relates to Super Bowl 50, ignores the fact that Denver had the best defense in the league in terms of total yards, but that's about it. Like, they led the league in sacks, which is a big deal, obviously. And we saw that in the AFC Championship game and in the Super Bowl. So that's a big deal. But Carolina was sixth in the league in sacks. And Denver led the league in sacks, but they only led it by three over the Patriots for the league lead. So it's not like they were 10 sacks better than every other team in football. Like, it wasn't like that. We're talking about a couple, not even, you know, what's three sacks divided by 16 games? Like, that's what the difference was, you know, on a per-game basis between what the Broncos did and what the Patriots did as far as getting to the quarterback. Denver was fourth allowed in points per game. They weren't first. They were fourth. And they allowed 18.5 a game, which is great. Carolina was sixth. Carolina averaged 19.3 a game. So for rounding, like they taught us in elementary school, right, they both gave up about 19 points a game. So, again, no major difference between the two. And then if you're looking at the total defense, as it's called, that focuses solely on yardage. That's where Denver was number one in the league. So when you hear everybody say Denver was number one in the league in defense, what they really mean is Denver gave up the fewest amount of yards of any team in football. But yards is not what wins games. It's points. So I don't understand why there is not a total defensive statistic, at least that I haven't seen, in the analytics world or something like that, or on profootballreference.com. I don't know. But there should be a statistic that keeps track of points allowed by a defense per game and for the season. So that means if a quarterback throws a pick six, that then should not go count against the defense because the defense didn't allow those points. But in actuality, that's exactly what happens. Like, we see that all the time. So the numbers that I gave you as far as who gave up the most points per game include stuff like defensive touchdowns by the opponent. So I don't really understand why there's no stat that kind of just spells that out in plain English. How much did this defense give up this year? the point total that a defense gave up should be the number one barometer, I feel like, when gauging a defense. But then there was Carolina again, which led the league in takeaways. Carolina was first in turnovers, and Denver was seventh in turnovers. And Carolina had six more turnovers than the number two team, which was Arizona. So I say all that to say I don't quite buy the narrative that people are spinning this morning that defense won championships. Not that defense didn't win this game, but they say that as if Carolina was all offense and no defense, and that's what I don't agree with. That's the part that I'm talking about, y'all, so don't misconstrue what I'm saying. Denver's defense was fantastic, obviously. Denver's defense deserved to win the game and the Super Bowl, obviously. But what I'm saying is that Carolina's offense was not the sole focal point of that team. They had a great offense and a great defense. But what we saw was the Panthers weren't ready to play on this big stage. Interestingly, your boy wrote some stuff about the Carolina Panthers on the website, and I'm going to read that verbatim right now because I know y'all came here to hear me read out loud. So this is what I had to say about the Panthers during the divisional round playoffs when they played the Seattle Seahawks. Now, mind you, I picked the Panthers to win that game, so I was right about that. However, this is what I said about the Panthers. Let me clear my throat before I read out loud, y'all. I said, this still feels like the type of game Seattle would pull out late, but only if you truly believe Carolina isn't ready for this stage. I liken this Panthers team to the 2009 Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron James won his first MVP. The team was almost unbeatable at home. They were blowing teams out every single night, and they were having more fun than any other team in the NBA. They were dancing on the sidelines before the game was over. They were taking mock photos. They had these little mock photo shoots and all that. And now I'm not really reading verbatim anymore, but you get the idea. That's what the Cavs were doing. And for whatever reason, now going back to the article, for whatever reason, teams that behave like this tend not to win at all. That Cavs team should have made the NBA Finals, but didn't, because when adversity finally hit in that Orlando series in the Eastern Conference Finals, they couldn't adjust. And that's what it was. So you see these young teams that dance and they have a good time, and LeBron was clowning, carrying on. He was about the same age Cam Newton is now back then. 24, 25 years old. Cam, I think, is 26. Mid-20s. Having a blast. You know, dabbing and dancing and all of that stuff, right? And it's all well and good when you win. But what happens when adversity hits? And that was the thing that troubled me about the Carolina Panthers. I was not sure that when adversity hit, that they would be able to respond. Now, what did they do? They beat the brakes off the Seahawks. So it was kind of like, all right, well, maybe they're past that, or at least maybe they were ready for that stage. In the NFC Championship game against the Cardinals, that's when I kind of thought the stage and the moment might catch up to them a little bit. And what happened? They beat the brakes off the Arizona Cardinals. So now, you know, you sit here and you're looking at it, and it's like, well, damn, maybe they are. Maybe this is just their time. And that's kind of what had me leaning towards the Panthers going into that game, into the Super Bowl, that is, was just the fact that they so convincingly whooped the Seahawks and the Cardinals, even though they were home games. They so convincingly dominated both of those teams, who were Super Bowl caliber teams, that there was no way that I believed that a team with one arm tied behind his back because their offense was garbage, there was no reason to think that they could beat this Carolina team. So that's kind of where my head was at. And I'm sorry to the Broncos Nation, because I clearly got that one wrong, but that was the idea. And so what we saw, though, yesterday was exactly what we saw from the Cavaliers when they lost to Orlando in the conference finals. They couldn't adjust. They were too busy dancing, getting a boogie on, and they didn't bring it when it was time to prepare. I even heard today, somewhere I heard, that allegedly Denver said that they didn't see anything different from Carolina in that game than from what they had seen throughout the film study during the course of the 2 weeks leading up to the game. In other words, Carolina didn't put in any new wrinkles. Carolina didn't have any new formations, nothing new. There was nothing that was there to catch Denver off guard. And that was a horrible game planning mistake by Ron Rivera and his staff, if that is in fact true. Because you can't go into the biggest game of your life relying solely on what got you there. You got to have a few tricks in the bag. And we've seen that for many, many a Super Bowl team time and again. And the fact that Carolina brought nothing new to the table, or so it appeared, is a little disheartening, especially if you're a Panthers fan. But I wanted to make that point that, you know, the dancing and all that stuff, it's all well and good, but those teams, they tend not to win games. And I wish I could take credit for it now, because I still had the Panthers winning. But those teams tend not to win games. And here's a prime example of how adversity got Carolina down. And I haven't heard a lot of people talk about this today so far either, y'all. But the biggest play of the Super Bowl, in my opinion, was not a play caused by the Broncos or the Panthers. It was the referee's decision to incorrectly rule that Jericho Cotchery had dropped that pass in the first quarter. Because if you remember, it was the Panthers' second drive. They were backed up deep in their own end. They were like maybe inside the 10-yard line. Cam hits Cotchery over the middle. Cotchery bobbles the ball. He should have caught it cleanly, but he didn't. He bobbles it. He hits the ground. They rule it incomplete. They go to the monitors. They review it, right? I've never seen a play where the player is inbounds the entire time. The ball never hits the ground, and they still ruled it incomplete. I've never seen it before. You tell me if I'm wrong. Tell me if I missed something. But I've never once have I seen I could understand it if Cotchery was like trying to drag his feet in bounds and he fell out of bounds but was still bobbling the ball like that. Then it becomes the bobble rule, like the dude said in the commercial where Aaron Rodgers just act like you bobbling the ball. It becomes that kind of thing, and that gets ruled incomplete if you don't have control while you're going out of bounds. Cotchery was in the middle of the field. He was between the hashes. Like, he wasn't anywhere remotely close to the sidelines. He was running down the seam when he caught this pass. The ball never hit the ground. He was in bounds the entire time, and they still ruled it incomplete. I've never seen anything like it. And this is like, why do we have review if we're gonna call that incomplete? Right? That doesn't make a ton of sense. That doesn't make any sense. So fast forward two plays later, guess who's getting strip sacked and gets a defensive touchdown? Cam gets hit by Von Miller, and the result is a defensive touchdown for the Denver Broncos, which put them up 10-0, and that's all Denver needed. Denver just needed to play with the lead, and that was what I said in the Super Bowl preview article, was that the only shot that Denver had was playing with the lead. And that was a cliche take going into the game, because you probably heard that a lot of places, but it's true. That Denver team was not built to come from behind. And we saw in the AFC Championship game where after that first drive that Denver had, where they marched down the field and scored on New England, Denver didn't do jack the rest of the game offensively. And even though they scored another touchdown, that was set up by a turnover by Brady through a pick and deep inside his own end. And that's what set up that touchdown. So you saw nothing from Denver's offense in that game. You saw nothing from Denver's offense in the Super Bowl. But all it took was a defensive score like that to really set the tone for Denver defensively. It allowed their guys to pin their ears back a little bit and really get after Cam Newton. But more importantly than that, it destroyed Cam's confidence and the confidence of the Carolina Panthers. And that was the bigger issue. It just wrecked their confidence at that point. And it goes back to the whole dancing, you know, shimmy boogie dab, you know, whatever thing. Like, you cannot. They weren't prepared to deal with adversity. That's the point. We saw this Panthers team feed off that party vibe, that party atmosphere that they created every Sunday. They fed off of that. It fueled their style of play. The dancing, the dabbing, the photo ops on the sidelines, the whole nine. That was their identity. That's who the Carolina Panthers were. But by getting down early, they just did not have the reservoir of experiences as a team playing from behind to fall back on. And that's what got them in trouble. So I'm not saying that had the referees gotten that call right, the Panthers would have won the game. I'm certainly not saying that. But what I am saying is, if the referees get that call correctly, I think there's a great chance that the beginning of the game goes a lot differently. And if the beginning of the game goes a lot differently, I think there's a great likelihood that the rest of the game goes a lot differently, because the Panthers are not playing from that 10-point hole necessarily, and they're able to kind of get into a rhythm. They pick up a first down here or there. They dance, they dab, they do whatever it is that they do to kind of get some confidence about themselves, but they never had that chance. Having said all that, I don't want to make it all about the Panthers, even though the Panthers did have a lot of screw-ups. Let me just get all the Panther stuff out of the way, and then I can focus on the Broncos. But the Panthers, I mean, just the mental errors, the penalties, how many false starts did they have in that game? It was at one point, they had so many false starts, at one point the referee, he blows the whistle and he just goes to the crowd like, cuts the mic on. False start on the offense, number 72. Like, he almost said it, his whole tone was like, hey, what do you want me to do, not call it? Like, they keep jumping off sides. Like, that's how undisciplined the Panthers were coming into that game. So the penalties were ridiculous. The way that the Panthers operated their offense was ridiculous. The drive to end the first half was so poorly executed. There was no urgency. It was ridiculously too methodical. And that would have been a good opportunity for the Panthers to try to change up the pace a little bit. They didn't do it. The mental errors on the punt return, we saw that, where they thought that the guy fair caught the ball, Jordan Norwood, former Cleveland Browns legend Jordan Norwood, they thought he fair caught the ball, and they just let him run down the sideline for the longest punt return in Super Bowl history. The missed field goal to start the third quarter. The Panthers had the ball to end the first half and to start the second half, and they had nothing to show for it. They didn't get one point out of it. So all those things, in addition to Cam Newton's, mistakes, some of the mistakes that he had, all that stuff, it just was not... The Panthers just picked a really bad time to have their worst game of the season, and that's really what it boiled down to. Again, much props to the Denver Broncos. Their offense did a great job of not getting in the way of their defense. They didn't do anything to screw the game up for the defense too much. Peyton had two turnovers, but that was it. And neither one of them really cost them that much, I don't think. I mean... I know they didn't score off the interception. I don't think they scored off the interception or the fumble. So, I mean, Peyton, only two turnovers. Considering the circumstances, considering where that guy is in his career and the kind of condition that he was in going into that game, to only turn the ball over twice against that defense, that's an accomplishment. It's an accomplishment. So, got to give Denver some credit. And obviously, all the credit in the world to the Denver defense. Again, I mean, I've already talked about it a little bit, but Von Miller was unblockable. DeMarcus Ware was great. They hit hard. They got after Cam Newton. When they got to Cam, they hit him hard. They put a hat on somebody, as they used to say back in the day. They put helmets on the football, forcing a fumble. Mike Tolbert hasn't fumbled in 2 years, and he fumbles twice in the first half. Or he hasn't fumbled since like 2011. Some kind of crazy stat like that, and he fumbles twice in the half. Part of that's on Tolbert for not securing the ball. Part of that's on Denver for doing a great job of stripping the ball. So... definitely have to give them credit, and I have to give the Broncos credit for just overcoming adversity, the adversity of not having an offense, and that everybody doubted them all season long, myself included. And so there was no reason for us to believe in the Broncos, though, and I should point that out. There was no reason for us to believe in the Broncos. Why is that? Well, if you look back at what they did against the Steelers, if my computer will cooperate, I'd love to tell you about it. Ben Roethlisberger was 24-37 for 339 yards. Now, he didn't throw a touchdown pass. He did not throw a touchdown pass. But he threw for 339 yards, and the Steelers as a team ran for another 85. So we're talking over 400 yards of offense for a team that had Ben supposedly playing with one arm, no Antonio Brown, right? No D'Angelo Williams, no Le'Veon Bell, right? And they still ran up 400 yards in Denver. So even if the points weren't on the board, they were, and yardage is supposed to be the Broncos thing, right? Like, they were first in yardage, right? In fewest yards allowed. That's their MO, not the turnovers. The sacks, yes, not so much the turnovers or anything like that. But they're really about limiting the yardage and getting you off the field. Well, Pittsburgh went up and down the field with their B roster, right? And it didn't matter because whatever it was that was going on, they fixed it before the New England game, and they really fine-tuned it going into the Carolina game. So you have to give credit where credit is due to the Broncos team. So I got to shout them out. Cam Newton, moving right along because I want to keep this one short, y'all. Cam Newton obviously did not play very well yesterday. He won MVP on Saturday. He deserved it. I would have voted for him if I had a vote. I will get a vote one day, and I'll tell you guys all about it on the podcast when I get my MVP vote. When they make me one of those 50 jokers voting on the postseason awards. Yeah, when that day comes, you guys will be the first to know about it on the preseason podcast of the year. But Cam was not himself. And I think Cam Newton is very close to being something very special. And he might already be there. And this is, I'm teasing the article or the column that we have going up later in the week a little bit. But Cam Newton, in the eyes of Black America, he's a pretty big deal at this point. And rightfully so. But there's a few things that went wrong on Sunday that kind of gives people cause for concern. The play where he, at the end in the fourth quarter, where he fumbled the ball and he didn't dive on it, and there was that whole thing was going on. I thought that was a weird play. I'm not entirely sure if we can just stand here and say, put a blanket statement out there and just say, Cam didn't dive for the ball because he didn't want to stick his face in there or whatever, because that kind of flies in the face of the logic of who Cam Newton is. Cam Newton is the most physical running quarterback we've ever seen in the National Football League. He's like Earl Campbell with a cannon arm. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not one to shy away from contact. I don't know why he would shy away from contact in the biggest moment of the biggest game of his life. So it really seemed more like either he just didn't see the ball, or maybe just in that moment, like, so many things had gone wrong, and in that moment, the ball's on the ground, and he just kind of froze for a second. Like, normally, when you're in football, your instincts just take over, and they just tell you to dive on the ball. For some reason, his instincts didn't kick in that same way. So, I don't know what caused it. I guess it's up for us to find out from Cam. The only problem is that Cam's not going to tell anybody because Cam's not talking to anybody. Which brings me to the next point. So, the post-game press conference, y'all. Here's my take, y'all. Cam Newton, you cannot behave that way after a loss. Like, you just can't. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be all smiles and, you know, whatever after the game. Like, I'm not saying that you have to just be like Ned Flanders at a post-game press conference after you just lost the Super Bowl and played terribly. I'm not saying that. But I saw a lot of people today on social media, and it's not even, the day ain't even over yet, y'all. But I've seen a lot of people on social media, particularly a lot of Black people on social media, making excuses for Cam's behavior. Oh, you would have been salty too if you lost the Super Bowl. Oh, he's got a right to be upset. Man, he overheard Chris Harris talking about how they made him a passer and he couldn't get it done, so he got up and left. I would have got up and left too. He's being who he is. Da, 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 da. I heard every excuse today, y'all. And I went to work today, so I didn't even have time to like read through all the comments on social media. I only saw a little bit of what I saw. And what I saw was a lot of Black folks in particular making a lot of excuses for this guy who's too smart and too much of a good leader to allow this to happen. Now, this is the same stuff that used to get him in trouble before. You know, a couple of years ago, when people said that he wasn't a good leader, and they said that he used to sulk after losses and all that stuff, and his body language was terrible, and he used to get killed for that. He was criticized for that constantly, and we're not seeing that anymore this year, because we thought it was because Cam changed, and that was the reason why they were winning. Based on what we know now, it looks like they were winning, and that's why we didn't see that side of Cam Newton, was because they won all year long and they didn't face any adversity. I said it on the site before the Super Bowl. The Panthers sailed through the entire season without facing any real adversity after the Kelvin Benjamin injury. Everything else was just sunshine and lollipops. Well, the NFL doesn't work that way. You got to struggle, man. Winning in the playoffs is hard. Why do you think I ride for Tom Brady so tough? It's because winning in the playoffs is really, really, really hard. And we're reminded of that every single season. When a guy like Peyton Manning, who's one of the greatest to ever play the game, had to win 3 games this year in a row just to finish his playoff career one game above 500, you know winning in the playoffs is damn near impossible. Hell, just getting to the playoffs is impossible. Just ask the Cleveland Browns. But winning is hard. That's the point. Winning is really, really hard at this stage of the game. And so, Cam, man, you just got to be better in that spot. You can't just resort and fall back into your old ways and resort to what you used to do back in the past. Just because you coasted through the entire regular season without a care in the world and everything going your way doesn't mean you get to act like that when things finally don't go your way. You just have to be better. You just won the MVP of the league not 24 hours ago. And now you want to sit up here and act like a baby in front of the entire country just because you lost a football game? And that's what he was, y'all. If we being, you know, keeping it 100 about it, he was being a baby, and he was being a little baby because he didn't get his way. And that's not acceptable. And I love the fact that Cam took it that personally, and he took it that hard, because it shows he cares. It shows that he really gives a damn, and that he wants to be great, and he wants to win a championship. And I love him for that. But, you know, I don't care what Black America is saying right now, making excuses. That's what y'all doing. Like, oh, this is the real reason why Cam Newton didn't want to do the post-game interview. No. No. You're making excuses. It's an excuse. Oh, well, Cam didn't want to sit there and listen to that. He couldn't focus on the questions because Chris Harris was talking about. So what if Chris Harris was talking about how Cam Newton couldn't throw the ball yesterday? You're saying to me he couldn't focus on his questions because he couldn't hear what Chris Harris was talking about? Cam Newton, every Sunday, plays in front of thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, and in front of millions on a national scale for a $1 billion corporation every single Sunday. He has to memorize a playbook that's like the white pages stacked on top of the yellow pages. That's how thick it is. He's got 300-pound linemen flying at his head, trying to take his head off at every moment, and he has to sit there and wait for them to hit him when he knows he's going to get hit and still thread the needle 50 yards down the field to a receiver that probably can't catch anyway, knowing that he's about to get his head taken off. That's what he has to do every Sunday, and he does it great. That's why he won MVP. You mean to tell me he can't focus in an interview and block out that noise and answer a couple questions? Of course he could have. He just chose not to because he was being a baby. And that's what I'm saying. That's not acceptable behavior from somebody of his caliber. Just with the hoodie up and the body language and barely answering any questions. All that stuff. Do you see Tom Brady doing that? Tom Brady lost an undefeated season. His team was actually 18-0, not like 18-1 or whatever the Panthers were going in yesterday. His team was 17-1. The Patriots were 18-0, and they had a chance to win it all and go 19-0, and they lost on a lucky play. Did you see Tom Brady sitting there with a hoodie on, not wanting to talk to the media? No, he got up there and stood there and took the heat and answered the questions and put the burden on himself. We saw Russell Wilson do that last year when he threw that interception. We've seen Peyton Manning put on a suit, Aaron Rodgers put on a suit, and stand there and answer questions and face the heat like a man. And I'm not saying that Cam Newton is not a man. So when Cam Newton inevitably hears this podcast, because we all know Cam's going to hear this. Cam, I want you to understand, I'm not saying you're not a man. I'm just saying you have to conduct yourself like one at all times. That's what I'm saying. And Black people, we got to hold them to a higher standard because this one is special. Again, foreshadowing for the article that's coming later this week. But Cam is special. And we can't let him off the hook just because his team lost the game and he was salty about it. Why don't you ask Carson Palmer how he felt last week? He turned the ball over like 15 times. But I'm pretty sure he didn't behave the way Cam Newton behaved after the game. And so we can't just allow him to be off the hook for that and start making up excuses as to why he behave that way and why it's okay for him to behave that way. And here's the other point. When you go around dabbing on people, when you get in the end zone and you dab, you know, all that stuff. That's me. That's dancing on a podcast. That's what dancing on a podcast sounds like. When you do all that stuff and you're doing it right in the defense's face, you can't get mad when things don't go your way. Like, it's bad enough that people don't like showboats. And I'm not saying he's a showboat necessarily. I mean, he certainly has a lot of showboat tendencies, at the very, very least. I think we can agree on that. But showboat, I think, kind of tells the wrong story about who I think Cam Newton is. But Nobody likes people that behave like that. People don't like that. Most people don't like that. And so when you're going to act like that, when things are going good, you cannot act the way he acted when things go bad. You just can't. Because it just makes you look like a punk. It makes you look like a sucker. And I don't think Cam Newton's a sucker. But he behaved like a sucker in that moment. And that was unfortunate. And black people, stop bailing him out. Okay? Stop it. Off the soapbox. Still had a great season, man. Cam, I mean, what can you say, man? Like I said, just stay tuned to HipHopSportsReport.com. Because I got something that's kind of speaks to that. But Cam has been great this year, and it's just unfortunate the way it went down, but he's just got to be a little bit better in that spot, y'all. Last thing I really want to touch on was Peyton Manning, of course. And like I said, I'm going to do a little Peyton Manning talk. Y'all know how it typically goes. There's a grin creeping on my face right now, y'all. Y'all know how it typically goes when I start talking about Peyton Manning. I've said, I don't know how many times I've said it, man. Peyton Manning is one of the 10 best quarterbacks ever. He's great. He's great. When I was playing, when my team, the team that I wanted to win, whether it was the Browns or Tom Brady and the Pats or whoever it was, regardless of whatever it was, when Peyton Manning had the ball, I was in fear because he's that gifted at quarterbacking. He was that good. And so he would put the fear of God in you as somebody who's rooting against him, because you never know when he could just turn it on and just be great. Like, that's kind of what it seemed like most of the time. In the playoffs, it's a little bit different. But I have not seen a ton of stuff about Peyton Manning's legacy today. I saw one article in the Washington Post, one in the New York Post, I think, saying, with this win, Peyton Manning is now unquestionably the greatest quarterback of all time. No, he's not, y'all. No, he's not. Calm down. He's a great player. He's a great player. Hall of Fame player. Two-time Super Bowl champion. All the records you can imagine. All the passing records you can imagine. Great player. The stats don't tell the whole story. And the numbers don't tell the whole story. As far as the number of rings he has. Doesn't tell the whole story. When you dig a little bit deeper, that's why you see, or that's where you see Peyton's shortcomings. And so, I don't know if you're really dissing somebody if you're calling them one of the greatest to ever do what it is that they did. But my stance on Peyton Manning has just always been that he's just a little bit overrated compared to what people want him to be. He's never been quite as good as people wanted him to be. And they want him to be Joe Montana or Tom Brady. And he's not that. They want him to be that because they like him. And they don't like Tom Brady. Did you see the way Tom Brady got booed yesterday before the game? Hilarious, right? But that just goes to show you that people can't stand Brady. Why do you think they can't stand Brady? I think the cheating allegations is part of it, which is ridiculous, especially Deflategate. But the bigger issue is because they win. That's the biggest reason why people hate the Patriots, is because they win more than everybody else. If there was another team that was squeaky clean and didn't have the allegations that the Patriots have hanging over them, but won all the time, as much as the Patriots do, a lot of people would hate them too. And if you don't believe that, you're lying to yourself. Stop it. So, people love Peyton Manning though. And Peyton Manning does Buick commercials, and he does pizza commercials, and he shouts out Budweiser for no reason, and people try to act like that wasn't an intentional move on his part. And he gets accused of having HGH sent to his house, and nobody talks about it. Like, that's who Peyton is, man. Like, Peyton is America's favorite quarterback. And so they're always going to try to make him out to be a little bit better than what he was. And what he was a regular season statistical monster. And when the chips were down, he's not the guy that you probably want at the helm when the ish hits the fan and the chips are down and it's the fourth quarter and it's a playoff game and you're on the road and the weather sucks and you need to come up with a fourth quarter touchdown drive or to take the lead or something. Peyton's not the guy you want in that spot. If you're picking anybody from history, Peyton is not the guy you want in that spot. Now, that's a very specific set of circumstances, and it just goes to show you how great he is. But I saw some weird articles. Like I said, those two that I mentioned was throwing out some weird statistics trying to make the point that Peyton's the greatest, and it felt like a reach that they were going to that extent to try to pull up these obscure statistics that nobody's ever heard of that sound made up, frankly. they did. I mean, don't look at the Washington Post article and you'll see what I'm talking about. But yeah, some of that stuff, man, it just seemed like a bit much. And as it relates to the Peyton Brady debate, this doesn't change anything. And I said before the game, winning didn't change Peyton Manning's place in history, because the Broncos weren't going to win this game because of Peyton Manning. They were going to win because of their defense. We already knew that going in. So it's not like Peyton was going to go out and throw four touchdowns and 450 yards, and then we would see, like, man, maybe we were wrong about this dude all along, or maybe I was wrong about this guy. No, we knew that it was going to be the Broncos defense dominating and Peyton Manning not screwing the game up. That was the formula for success for the Broncos. I even saw a buddy of mine who I went to school with, who loves Peyton and will argue me tooth and nail about Peyton and Brady. I saw him, I think he put something on his Twitter that said, like, you know, Peyton just won a Super Bowl in his worst season, so haters, go ahead and say what you got to say about Peyton. As if that's some sort of accomplishment that he won the Super Bowl in his worst season that shows how great he is or something like that. It's like, no. He didn't do anything hardly to contribute to the outcome yesterday. He just didn't lose it. But if you're going to play that card, then you have to look at all the years in which Peyton was the franchise guy carrying the team, and his team came up short. All those home playoff games that he lost. All those games where he had a soul-crushing interception, like the Saints Super Bowl or the Ravens game when he played for the Broncos in the overtime. Like, these are defining moments of his career where he just made brutal, brutal mistakes that can't be overlooked if we're splitting hairs talking about the greatest to ever do it. So I'm not saying Peyton Manning's not great. He's obviously great. You know, I mean, if I had to start my franchise off with Peyton Manning at the helm in 1998, I'd be floating on air if he came to the Browns in 1998 and he was my quarterback. Peyton is great, but if we're talking about splitting hairs here, talking about the greatest of the greatest of the greats, then he comes up short because he always struggled when it was prime time, going all the way back to Tennessee. He struggled in that spot. And we saw him struggle year after year after year in the playoffs. Peyton wins 75% of his games as a regular season starter and barely, as of yesterday, over 50% of his starts as a playoff quarterback. But people want to make all these excuses for his playoff failures as if it's like 17 years worth of coincidences, you know? And I said a few years ago, that stuff about guys blowing coverages and stuff like that, just, you know, like the Raheem Moore play in that Ravens game, stuff like that, that's an occupational hazard of being a great quarterback, is that you have to deal with stuff like that. And you have to overcome it. You have to find a way to overcome it. And there was a lot of times where he didn't do that. So for as great as he was, if we're going to judge him by that criteria of how great he was during the regular season, we can't then flip it in the playoffs and say that every time that his team came up short when they should not have, that it was all circumstantial. We can't do that. So that's kind of my piece on Peyton. He's great. He's one of the greats to ever do it. He's in the top 10 somewhere probably between 4 and 8 to me. You know, he's somewhere in there. I don't know where exactly. I don't have an exact list. He's probably somewhere hanging out in that range. He's got a lot of statistical advantages over Tom Brady when you compare them career to career. But a lot of those people that point that out fail to realize that Peyton has played 3 more full seasons as an NFL quarterback than Brady has. So if Brady is still healthy and productive for the next 3 years, maybe he will be, maybe he won't be. But if he is, 3 years from now, come talk to me about their career statistics, and they're going to be looking mighty similar. And some of those records that Peyton has, the 200 career wins, that's fallen. We know Brady's going to get that record. Brady's got like 185 wins right now. Peyton's got 200, which is the most ever playoffs and regular season combined. A fantastic accomplishment. But Brady's going to get that record. The career passing yards and career touchdown passes, there's no reason to think that Brady won't be right in the mix for those records 3 years from now. at the current pace that he's playing at, there's no reason to think he won't be in shouting distance of those record marks, right? And he's going to throw a lot less interceptions than Peyton Manning did. And he's going to make a lot less crucial mistakes and have a lot less playoff losses and failures where his team came up short when they shouldn't have, all that stuff. So that's kind of what it is, y'all. I'm happy for Peyton that he was able to go out on top, and he needs to retire like now, like at 9 o'clock. He needs to like call a press conference and retire because he's got nothing left. But it was awesome for him to go out the way that he did, and he's one of the greats that we've ever seen. And as much as I kind of rooted against him because of the Brady thing, so to speak, just the fact that, you know, I was a Brady guy, and so for the betterment of my argument, it made me want to root against him and root for Brady, especially when they went head to head. And as much as I don't like the Denver Broncos for what they did to the Cleveland Browns all those years ago back in the 80s, it was still great for Peyton to go out the way that he did. And I mean, he's a champion. I mean, even though I don't think. Now I'm sucking myself back into an argument right now, y'all. Because Peyton didn't really do nothing in those two championship runs. That's the only thing. I'm sorry. I just got to say it. I just got to be honest and truthful. In those two championship runs, the one in 06, Peyton played, I think, 4 playoff games. He threw three touchdowns and 7 interceptions in those 4 games. That's terrible. He didn't have a passer rating above, I don't think he had a passer rating above 82 in any of those 4 games. And then this year, he was obviously a shell of himself. So you can't count this year. So, you know, yeah, he's a 2-time champion, man. But, I mean, did he ever jump up and seize greatness at its highest level? No, he didn't. So that's kind of why I have to bump him back a notch or two. So, yeah, I'm nitpicking a little bit with Peyton. If I wanted to nitpick, I would tell you that Peyton Manning played it. If I wanted to play devil's advocate for Peyton on his behalf, I would tell you that he went to 4 Super Bowls with 4 different head coaches and 2 different franchises, and he won 1 with each, which is remarkable. If I wanted to nitpick you, I would tell you that Peyton Manning, pretty much by his standards, played like trash in all 4 of those Super Bowls. Think about it. Think back to that Bears game. They gave Dominic Rhodes, or they shafted Dominic Rhodes, I think it was, out of the MVP award. They kind of gifted it to Peyton just because he was Peyton. But he didn't do anything impressive in that game. 25 of 38, 247 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick, passer rating of 81.8. Again, that was the high watermark for that postseason run in which he threw 3 touchdowns and 7 picks, and the Colts won the Super Bowl. 2009 season, Super Bowl against the New Orleans Saints, 31 of 45, 333 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, passer rating of 88.5. By Peyton standards, nothing special, not all that impressive. Super Bowl against Seattle, of course, that was a whitewash. 34-49, 280 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, 73.5 passer rating, and his team lost 43-8. And then last night, Peyton was 13-23 for 141 yards, no touchdowns, and 1 interception. So, and a passer rating of 56.6. That was his 4 Super Bowls. So again, great player. He's not the guy that I want having the ball in crunch time if I had my choice of all the quarterbacks in history, and that's why he kind of slots in a little bit below some other guys. But good for him. Like I said, man, good on him for taking a step back, scaling back, and letting his defense do work. And it worked. So good on him for that, and congratulations on a tremendous, tremendous career for Peyton Manning. He was a worthy adversary to my boy, TB12, the God QB. But I'm going to miss Peyton. He was fun to root against. But that's pretty much it, y'all. I don't really have much else to say about the game. Panthers ought to be back next year. Maybe not in the Super Bowl, but they should be contending next year. The Broncos, if Brock Osweiler can be halfway decent, maybe they can go to the Super Bowl again, because it didn't take much from the quarterback position for them to get there this time around. That'll do it, y'all. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast, thank you for listening. Preseason podcast of the year. Go check out the website. Go like us on Facebook. Go ahead and add us or follow us on Twitter. And please go ahead and check out the podcast on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. Congratulations, Denver Broncos.
Oh, the Denver Broncos.
And we out here, y'all. Peace.
And if these niggas thought about they self for a change, then maybe they could finally figure out how to get they self some change. I done seen jealousy make niggas do 10 terrible things. Now the song going did with hope, oh yeah, shit have never changed. That's a worry though, we are the champions. Spend a lot of time in Hamptons, do a lot of bitch you can't be young. Damn, all these fans can't be wrong. Damn, B.I.G., you can't be gone. Make those beast thugs wanna rock. Make a nigga feel just like pop. Make it street, but it just might pop. Make it straight to the mountaintop. Had to shout on lock when they finally heard a sound with rock. Came in the game, changing the game, changed straight from Dame, yeah. If you're feeling this hand, then your fucking hands in the air.
It's the Rockefeller label, baby, it's the mother labels, baby. And we've been ducking shots from all them haters lately. We getting paper, baby, the mother's trying to keep up. We on top, so I guess we they savers. Nope, we labeled as the Rockefellers. Jacob, watch us, colors everywhere, hell yeah. Test us in the game, just blow, fuck they hating for. Don't make me pop a fella, rock a fella, stop it fellas, could get hop a fella, see?
What? Don't make me chop a fellas, have to call a cop for fellas or the helicopter fellas. Nigga, I'm a Rockefeller, what nigga for Rockefeller? Shit, I'm a Rockefeller.
Dang!
God damn, Beans, I got this. Let me talk my shit one time.
No, we the illest niggas, realest. I will kill these niggas.
Now that's what the fuck I'm talking about. And you wonder why I'm proud of my family? And you wonder why I ain't got a rap? I got niggas that will assassinate you, B. Lyrically, really shut you the fuck down. Don't get your career ended. Leave us the fuck alone. Let us rock. We are rock music. With the R.
I'm here, Dame.
O. C.
I'm here.
Power.
Killer. This is just fate. How I would sit on the crate, listen to tapes. Every day a frisk was at stake. Chicks, cuffs, risk getting raped. My mission was straight to visit them states near them great Michigan lakes. And fuck a bathroom, my pistol in the gate. Flip the bird out of flip a bird, switch up my plates. I got plans that was better than jail. Now look, we like Bird Parish, Kevin McHale, Scott Worthy, Jabbar, and Magic. Oh my God, it's magic. Isaiah Dumars, I will carve your casket. Phil Scotty and Mike, Phil Shaq and Kobe. My guests will detach your homies. And I'm friends with thugs, I sell endless drugs. For the rock fam, dog, I extend my love. Jay Bleak, beef, I be tossing the bridge. Tossing they wigs, make corpse of they kids. Free old Sparks at Mac Mitten. I'm 95 South, no doubt, Mac Clifford. I stack chips in, I'm Saks Fiffin. Louis Vuitton loafers, hat dripping. I go retrieve a duck, tell her proceed and suck. I don't just beat my cases, I beat them up. My lawyer eat them up, put bars behind me. I'm glad they didn't stop that car behind me, shit. It had three felons, gun shooters, no. 50 cal ACP bazooka Joe. Don't be stupid though, I get squirrel, man. I'm for real, man. Yeah, it's killer game. Dipset, bitch.
Oh my God, it's the newest power forward of the squad. A legacy like Jordan with the mob. They be known for breaking motherfuckers' hearts. Put Rockefeller on my pinky ring. Fuck a battle, nigga, I'ma get the thanks. Rolling with them lords and the folks about the shots. Who's they gon' make us pick a gang? I represent the mob to the fullest. You don't want it with the broadest, gonna put it. But Kanye on the track of the dream team. I'm finna be the shit no matter which way you put it. They best the nigga in. I'm finna go in the zone. Taking it to some motherfuckers' zones. Cut the zone, rob a rock until I'm gone. Fill up my body with air, cut your chrome. Take it to your gut. take it to your chest. I'll be more provoking when I'm smoking sex. Then we getting stronger. Hope you got a band. Somebody got the mat. Somebody got them tags. Something you got. B's got pearl. Legendary, we on top of the world.